I know it's been 7 days. You may be in need of your basketball fix on all matters pertaining to the association. You might have thought that this was just a one-off thing, but I promise you, we have not left you. What's going on, world, and welcome inside to yet another edition of the New 24 podcast, episode two for the listeners, wherever you are across the globe. Keep scoring all things and inspiring to stay up to date on the latest news to take shape over the last 7 days in the NBA. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins. And as always, I'm running the floor beside the man of many hustles and the one whose voice you heard alongside of me in the opening episode of the pod last week, the co-host himself, Torrence Stagger. What's going
What's
on, my
good?
man?
What's good, world? How y'all doing? Shout out to my boy G here. We locked in for episode two. Let's get it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Last week on the first episode of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrence discussed the spectacular start of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who still remain the lone unbeaten team in the NBA as of this recording, and recently set the franchise record for the longest win streak in franchise history this past week after earning their 14th consecutive win in last Friday's home victory against the Chicago Bulls in NBA Cup play. The Cavs are currently 15-0, and as we know, they got a big game that will be final once this episode drops against the defending world champion Boston Celtics. We're going to see if they can make it 16 in a row. Definitely a story to track and continue to see surface and how it plays out, knowing that this has been the best start by a team in recent memory since the 2014-15 Golden State Warriors, who won the championship. We also discussed the state of the Phoenix Suns and the challenge that lies ahead for them to stay atop of the Western Conference standards in the absence of Kevin Durant. Things that you need to look forward to watching out in the second annual NBA Cup, in addition to the slow starts that the Milwaukee Bucks and Philadelphia 76ers have gotten off to in the Eastern Conference. And in this week's episode, we will seek to discuss a trio of young teams in the association that have gotten off to hot starts and are doing everything within their power to put the rest of the league on full notice. However, before we get into all of that, let's take a quick moment to salute the standout performances and feats we managed to witness unfold as fans of the game over the last week in the NBA, starting with none other than the reigning Western Conference Player of the Week, Sacramento Kings All-Star guard De'Aaron Fox, who became just the second player in the history of the franchise to score at least 100 points or more within a two-game span, joining his fellow Kentucky Wildcat brother DeMarcus Cousins in the exclusive club by dropping 49 points on 16 for 30 shooting from the floor, and a four-point win this past weekend against the Utah Jazz, a performance that came the night after Fox exploded for 60 points on 22 for 35 shooting from the field in an overtime loss against the Minnesota Timberwolves, as Fox is just the third player in NBA history to score at least 109 points over the course of 2 days, joining the late great Hall of Famer Kobe Bean Bryant and Wilt Chamberlain. In addition to the reigning MVP himself, Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets, who became just the first player in league history to ever record 37-plus points, 18-plus rebounds, and 15-plus assists in a single outing, as the Serbian big man will record his sixth triple-double, which is currently leading the league this season, 38 minutes of court time to help Denver earn a dub at home against the Dallas Mavs. And last but not least, another MVP recipient, and the man who took the step back to another stratosphere, James Harden, is the 10-time All-Star guard of the LA Clippers, surpassed Hall of Famer Ray Allen to move officially into second place on the NBA's all-time made three-pointers list to close out week four on the 24-25 campaign. Torrence, we had the pleasure of seeing a series of majestic outings last week, such as Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs exploding for his first 50-point game of his young career in a win against the Washington Wizards. Giannis Antetokounmpo following up that performance with a 59-point night to help lead the Bucks in an overtime win against the Detroit Pistons on the same day as Wemby's 50 ball, marking the most points scored in a single game by a player in the league this season to date. When you take a quick glance around the NBA right now, what would you say is the one thing that has stood out to you the most since episode one, when we last met and talked about the game?
Oh, the Cavaliers, they're continuing a winning streak. I think we got right now A lot of teams are dealing with injuries earlier. We got some teams that are just slow starters. We got young teams trying to figure it out. We got the vets trying to get in shape, getting into the groove. But this has been the one team, even including the Boston Celtics, I really don't think they've really played their best basketball. Cleveland's been the one team from the gate. They've been playing great on both sides. The chemistry between Mitchell and Garland still at a high level at the moment. Like as we said earlier, we waiting on the game tonight against the Celtics, probably the biggest game of the season so far, and another tournament game as well. I would definitely go. I would go with the Cavs for that, and because we don't know yet if this team is at its peak and that they'll come down, or if they'll remain at this level, or even ascend even further as far as chemistry and efficiency goes.
Yeah, what Cleveland's doing has been special to watch. I'm not gonna lie to you, man. Every single night, the way they find the ways to win games, it doesn't matter whether they're down double digits or up by double digits and a team makes a run, they find a way to close opponents out. And it's not just due to the stellar play of Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, like we talked about last week. Guys off the bench are stepping up. Ty Jerome coming up big in key situations and spots of games. Dean Wade hitting clutch threes. You know, Evan Mobley rising to the occasion with big time blocks late in games. Jared Allen with his stellar play. They're playing as a team. Kenny Atkinson got those guys believing. And I'm very curious to see how far that they can go as a group. But when I look at the NBA right now, the one thing that stood out to me the most since our last episode has been the play of Anthony Davis and the disrespect I believe that he's getting from the media. I saw the NBA power rankings for the MVP race that just dropped. And Sean Powell of NBA.com initially had him ranked number one. However, with Jokic play as of late being MVP worthy, I'm not taking anything away from Nikola Jokic this season. It's been MVP worthy. I think you could question some of the MVPs he's won in the past, but this one has definitely been a year where he's played stellar basketball enough to be in the top two of that conversation. Not saying that he did in other years, but this year he's really played at a great level. But what Anthony Davis is doing right now, he deserves to be lauded. And I believe that he's in the top three. Matter of fact, I'm not going to say top three. I'm going to take that back. Top two of the MVP race, no matter how you want to put it right now with the way in which he's played. The man seems like he's scoring 30 or more every time the Lakers win a game. Look at what he's doing on both ends of the floor for that ball club. J.J. Redick said when he got this job as the head coach of Los Angeles Lakers that he was going to find a way to activate AD, get him more involved in the offensive floor of things and make sure that they play through him. Since they played through him, seems like he's playing with a new energy level and he's managing to do it despite playing with plantar fasciitis. So I have to tip my cap where it's due. We've always talked about how this guy's an MVP level player when healthy and is one of the best players, if not the best player in the league to not win the award. And I think with the Lakers right now being a top three seed in the West, he needs to start getting his credit for that. You know, once upon a time, he used to give guys a lot of credit for leading their team to the top three or four of the standings. Now, all of a sudden, that started to get lost. You look at this Lakers squad, a team that a lot of people wanted to laugh at and count out under Darvin Ham, and starting to play good basketball right now. Anthony Davis is just as much of a big part of that as LeBron James, if not more.
Yeah, I would say as somebody that probably watches every Lakers game every night, trying to let, watch the end of LeBron's career. This season from opening game, it's been all about AD on both sides, as you mentioned, because you can honestly make the case for him to be defensive player of the year as well, at the very least, if he doesn't get the MVP award. Because I mean, the Lakers, they don't have any guys on the team you can name as a great perimeter defender. AD cleans all of that up every single night. And you can see the dip anytime he sits on the bench. I'm curious as to who you have as number one, if not AD.
If it's not AD, I would say it's Jokic. But in my opinion right now, I'm giving it to AD. I mean, he ranks second in the league in scoring, eighth in rebounds a game. He's top 20 in shooting percentage. And you look at what he's doing, like he put up 40 and 12 against the Spurs. And Victor Wembanyama is a guy who we know is an all-defensive team member was the first rookie, I believe, in the history of the league to make an all-defensive team. He didn't want no parts of him in that matchup. And in some aspects, I felt as though he was really trying to hide as best as he could when AD had the ball. And that's not me, you know, trying to slight the kid. And everybody has their welcome to the league moment. He got a few of those buckets. But that was a big game, I felt like. And the rest of the country, as we know, was watching that game, a battle between two generational prospects and LeBron and Wimby. And to have AD take that spotlight and hold it large and tall like he did, I think that was really the game for me that made me say, you know what, through the first 4 weeks of the season, we really need to start paying attention to him and talking about him a lot more. I see him being heavily talked about on ESPN, but on other platforms, I'm not seeing a lot of a love and praise going this man's way. He's playing some great basketball right now, the basketball we've all wanted to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's very early to speak about MVP. Well, we're almost at the 20-game mark, so that's about a quarter of the way through. But right. To close this out real quick, I'll say that the game tonight definitely is an MVP battle. You got Jason Tatum and you got Donovan Mitchell. Because like I said, we spoke about last time, you talked about Donovan Mitchell and staying in Cleveland when everybody pretty much had him not staying in the season they're having this season and his performance against the Lakers. I mean, he came out in that first quarter and just decided that LeBron and Bronny's homecoming didn't matter to him. And those type of performances – like this season, those are going to count. So, you know, like I said, it's early. I definitely feel like AD is one of the top candidates. Jokic got the video game stats. Jason Tatum, he's been putting up 30 pretty much every single night. And Donovan Mitchell's leading the top team in the league right now. So I would say those probably are the four guys to watch right now at this point in the season. Of course, we're going to have other guys and come in and fall out of the race as well.
And Donovan Mitchell was one of those guys. He could have easily won Eastern Conference Player of the Week this past week because I don't believe it was a single game where he didn't finish with at least 30 points or more. They were all wins. And that game he had in Philadelphia, hitting that clutch step back to seal the deal and silence the crowd at Wells Fargo Center, that was an epic shot. And that was a shot that really let me know with the way that they were playing, if they continue to play like this and win games like they have and remain unbeaten, this streak can go for quite a while, but obviously, as we know, that streak is going to be tested. And like I said, once this podcast drops, we'll know who ended up coming out victorious in that big-time matchup out in Boston. But now that we got all of the customary items out the way to start this week's show, let's get into the topics at hand this week, beginning with a team in the West right now that currently sits within the top five of the standings as of this recording, while also residing in that same spirit and defensive rating and net rating right now, and that's the Houston Rockets. Just last week, the Rockets managed to take home victories in every single contest, defeating the LA Clippers twice over a three-day period to play spoiler to James Harden's homecoming down in H-Town, in addition to scoring 143 points in a 36-point blowout win against the Bulls, Chicago this past Sunday at the United Center. As Houston has posted a 7-3 record over their last 10 games, he currently boasts a 10-5 record on the year thus far under head coach Ime Udoka, who was in his second season with the franchise. Torrence, I'm not sure how much you've been watching Rockets basketball as of late, but I do know that we've had plenty of convos off the record about this organization, the young talent that they possess, ranging from Jabari Smith Jr., Amen Thompson, Daylen Green, and Alperen Sengun, to name a few. We saw this team turn a corner after the All-Star break and give the Golden State Warriors a run for their money late last season for the final play-in spot in the West. One could make the argument that Jalen Green was arguably the best player in the league during the month of March with some of the performances that he had. Now it appears we're seeing these pieces they've acquired through the draft growing as one. Jabari Smith Jr. recently went 5-for-8 from three-point land en route to a 28-point, 11-rebound night against the Clippers on Friday. Alperen Sengun constructing triple-doubles in two out of his last three contests, becoming the first Rocket center ever in franchise history to record back-to-back triple-doubles. Not even Hakeem Olajuwon can say that. Based on what you've seen thus far through 15 games with this group, do you believe that Houston has a chance to be to the Western Conference this season what the Orlando Magic were last season in the Eastern Conference? And what I mean at home for the listeners before I let you answer that, Torrence, is last year, a lot of people who watched the league expected Orlando to be one of those playing teams. I think some people who watched the league came into this year expecting Houston to be one of the thick of the playing conversation. However, they've elevated themselves to top five in the standings, similar to how Orlando did last year, finishing in the top five of the Eastern Conference standings.
Yeah, I think the difference would be that in the West, like the standings are just a lot more compact. Like right now,
Absolutely.
if the playoffs were today, the Dallas Mavericks would be not even in the play-in. They would be the 11th seed. So we still got teams like Sacramento, Memphis. I don't know if they'll finish in the top six outside of the play-in right now, but they have a great chance. Number one, they're number three in defense right now in the league. And Udoka, that's something that even if you go back to his days in Boston, defense and ball movement, teamwork, those principles, you can finally see the difference in year two with the Rockets, as opposed to the last iteration before he was there. He's getting buy-in from guys like Jalen Green. Fred VanVleet, he's always been known to get after it. Dylan Brooks, he gets after it. You got those guys to help motivate and lead guys like Jalen Green, who, if in another situation without those vets and without Ime Udoka, he might have just been focused on scoring, getting his buckets, getting his points. And I think that was also a key thing from them too this season. You got Jalen and Sengun new contracts. So at least for this season, those guys are going to be there. And you can continue to build on everything that you have going. I mean, outside of like 3-point shooting, this team doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. You know, they got good length. They get up and down the court. I think that they have an excellent 1-2 combo for the future in Sengun and Jalen Green if they choose to keep it that way. And I think a guy like Jabari Smith, he's starting to find his way. Because when I think of Sengun and Jalen Green, I almost think of them similar to Jokic and Murray, where he's not quite Jokic, but at the same time, I might take someone like Jalen Green's upside over a Jamal Murray. So it kind of evens out in a way. But a guy like Michael Porter Jr. is what makes or breaks Denver's team. And I think Jabari Smith can have that same impact. He's improved his 3-point shooting this season, and he also has the ability to play low, unlike Michael Porter, and the defense. So if they can continue to just build on the chemistry, keep the young guys locked in, I don't see any reason why they couldn't be a top six seed. But like I said, in the West, it will be difficult.
Oh, I agree with you when you say it's going to be difficult in the Western Conference, but as we know, the standards fluctuate by the day and by the week, each and every week throughout the season, and you end up where you end up, and hopefully you end up somewhere within that top six if you're trying to, get in without the play-in. If you get a play-in spot, you got to fight for your life and try to get one of those final two seeds. It is what it is. But when I look at Houston right now, I think that they have the ability to stay within the top six, and I'll tell you why. When I look at this defense, and you talk about all the guys that you bring up. Amen Thompson right now is playing on another level. Tari Eason right now is playing in another level. And I think those two guys being together, coming off the bench on the second unit, has really changed games in Houston's favor more often than it has not over the last week and a half. We saw these guys both record double doubles last week against the Clippers, and they were giving James Harden fits, and they were aggressive. You can, when they get stops, they're seeking a run, pushing in transition, big platoon, letting them know about it a little bit, and them, sharing a laugh about it. They had them mic'd up on the Rockets home broadcast on Space City Home Network. That was real fun to see. And you see the activity, guys talking out there, staying connected. That's what I love to see the most. And when I talk about Amen Thompson, it's not only just his defense that's standing out, it's his offense that's standing out. You see him starting to get into that point guard role a little bit more, like he was when he was playing back at Overtime Elite. Made an incredible pass on the baseline of Fred VanVleet, finding the board cut inside the lane. You see that on top of an improvement and a confidence in him his ability rather to shoot the three ball, and he saw a couple fall against the Clippers, you could tell that that's really like boosting his confidence, and he's attacking the rim at will. And once he gets downhill, if you're not in front of him after his first step, he's pretty much got you beat. And I'm looking at this kid, and I'm like, his ceiling is limitless because he's able to play every position damn near on the floor. And he's exceptional off the ball, not only as a cutter, but as a role man. You know, I find myself a lot of nights when I'm watching him and I'm like, I don't know what position he plays, but you can't really give him a position. He just is a true athlete and a player, and a well-polished player. And I think over time, once he finds confidence in that jump shot even more, he's going to do even better things in the league. Jalen Green and Sengun, their two-man game has been very solid since they've come into the league together. And I wanted to talk about Houston's team as a way to stress to our audience the importance of roster building. You know, like this was a team when they made the James Harden trade. You had a lot of people asking, why didn't they make the move for Ben Simmons? You had at the time, Ben Simmons at the time was one of the most versatile wing defenders in the league, if not the best wing defender in the league, and one of the game's greatest playmakers. I still think he can be when he plays more often than not, but as we know, his career has been overtaken by injuries as of recent times. But a lot of people are questioning that, wondering why did they want to go after all the draft picks and capital like that, and why they only want to take certain guys back. Well, Rafael Stone's patience has proven to pay off. And I think as a result of that, we're seeing a team that has grown up together, learn how to fly with proper head coaching and veterans in place that can show them how to win, such as a Dillon Brooks, Fred VanVleet, that's bringing a championship ring and pedigree from Toronto with him. And you add that alongside of, you know, like guys like Steven Adams, Jeff Green, it's even better. So they're learning how to win. And I think they can be what Orlando was last season in the East. And that is a team that finishes winning the top 4 to 6 and makes some noise in the first round. They may not win, but they're a team that should be on your radar, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the roster building is probably one of the more impressive aspects of how this team's been built. Because we haven't even mentioned Cam Whitmore.
Right.
You know, like Reed Shepherd, he's the newest rookie. On top of the fact that, I mean, going from Steven Silas to Ime Udoka, it might be one of the biggest. I won't say it's a Kevin Durant to Golden State size move, of course, because it's that's a player at the end of the
Right.
day, and that's one of the greatest players of all time. But you go get a coach who was just in the NBA Finals with a team that young, and he's a very young coach as well, and you
Right.
don't have an established star like a James Harden there, where he has to acquiesce to this star. I mean, they're like this is Ime's program. This is his program from top to bottom, along with Rafael Stone and Tillman Fertitta. Like top to bottom, they seem aligned. I know there's been rumors of them possibly trying to trade for a star. We heard Kevin Durant. We heard Giannis's name, which seems very likely at some point. I don't know if it'll be this season or next season because like we have a lot of young guys. Sengun and Jalen, like I previously mentioned, they just got their contracts. You won't be able to pay all of these guys.
No,
So
definitely not that.
at some point there will have to be some level of consolidation. But man, I mean, they pretty much have every move available to them based on what they have on their roster.
What a boatload of cap space to play with
And
because of the
they're in
way in which
Houston.
they structured the deal.
Yeah, and they're in Houston, and you got, like you said, the way they structured the deals. Dillon Brooks and Fred VanVleet, their contracts are coming up soon. So if you feel like Thompson and Easton, those guys like that are ready, you might pull the trigger on trading one of those guys to another veteran contending team and getting back an asset in the short term if you're not ready to make the move for another superstar or a blue chip prospect.
And I'm glad that you actually mentioned that. I'm very glad that you mentioned that because I was thinking about that just watching Thompson and Eason on the floor together. I'm like, they're coming off the bench, but they're knocking on the door. And it's a possibility that Jabari Smith Jr. might not even be starting within the next 3 weeks. It's a possibility. Like, because they could really put Thompson at the three or the one, or they could put Eason at the four. Like, it's just it's
Give me
the
your,
optionality
give
that
me
they
your,
have.
give me your starting five for this team if you were Emac. And let and I'm saying, don't worry about timing or anything. Like
The
get,
chemistry.
don't yeah. Just give me your. Well, man, you could think about chemistry, but I'm saying it's like, I know Fred VanVleet might not be there long term, but he might be the better option today. Let if you were the GM of the Rockets, you're not trading. You're not making any trades. You're not worried about guys' situations. You just walk in and you're like, you know what? I'm gonna just take what I have and we're gonna go with the starting five I see for today and the future. Who would be that starting five?
Well, today's starting five, I would keep it as is, but the future one,
Yeah, that's the question I'm really getting to.
the one that's set to come, I would say Amen Thompson at the one. I would say Jalen Green at the two. I would say at the three, you have Tari Eason. And at the four, you have Smith. And at the five, you have Alperen Sengun. That's what I really believe will be the starting five of the Houston Rockets going forward.
So that's why it kind of, because listening to what you said, the pause really came around that 3-4 spot. So I think that's why it kind of makes sense that the guys that they are rumored are KD and Giannis. Because one, those are, that's the biggest, the most important spot in the league is that wing position, that 3-4. Do you have a guy that's good enough to slide back and forth between the two spots, whether you're playing small or big, and are they in a dominant scorer and a great defender, which is a premium. Like it's really only four guys that you can kind of mention at those spots. But yeah, I could see that team being pretty, that's a pretty futuristic team too, if you think about the size and athleticism as well.
Not a starter under 6 foot.
Six.
Red. Six. Yeah, for real, for real.
Like Jalen asked what Jalen would be the smallest guy in that lineup.
Jalen, that's what I'm saying. And he
And
is the two.
he's a big two, he's actually a
Right.
big shooting guard.
Exactly. That's the team of the future
And you
in
still
Houston.
and you would still have Reed, Shepard, Cam Whitmore. You'd have those two off the bench. And then, you
Right.
know, whatever you decide to do with Dillon Brooks or VanVleet, depending on what stage of the career they're at, whether they want to go out and get another big deal or if they're comfortable playing a smaller role in Houston long term.
Yeah. I don't see them fitting in long term, but I do believe that they have helped to build the blueprint and they've done a hell of a job. And Dillon Brooks definitely deserves to be lauded because he's done exactly what they brought him in there for to do. And that's provide veteran leadership, particularly on the floor. But he's also in a way kind of revamped himself in Houston. From an image standpoint, like he is very well beloved there by the fans and whatnot. Not that it really bothered me about like the way he played the game, because he's always been a tough player before. A guy that was drafted by that franchise, he traded to Memphis. A lot of people don't know that. To come back to that franchise and get his payday and actually be a key contributor there, it's been pretty dope.
But that's the best part of the, like, goes back to the roster builder. You know, you got Ime in there. You give him a young team. You give him a guy like Jalen Green, who just based off his image and stories about him off the court, you'd have a certain perception of him. And you got Sengun, the European, like, is this guy soft? Well, you bring in VanVleet and Dillon Brooks. I mean, those two get it out the mud type of players. Who gonna work hard every practice, every possession? I mean, that sets a blueprint for a great culture going forward.
I agree. And we talk about culture. We talk about how young this team is. The average age of Houston's current roster is surprisingly 25.8 years old. I thought it was much younger. And the only reason why I say surprisingly, because the majority of the Rockets' core players, such as the ones we talked about, are under the age of 25. When you look at the pieces that they have and how they played to start this season, Would you say that Houston boasts the best under 25 core in the NBA right now, outside of another team that we'll seek to discuss later in the show? And the two other teams we're going to discuss later in the show, I think those are the ones where the real argument might lie.
I don't know. First of all, nigga, Jeff Green, 45 years old, so that definitely raised the number.
I know.
Up on
I said that too. I said that too. Yeah, he's 38.
Yeah. Nah, man, this is the best young team right here, bro. Because outside of the team we're gonna talk about later, having an MVP candidate on the team, and I guess you could say the team out in the East as well. They might have had one as well if it wasn't an injury sustained early, but. I mean, we just talked about the Rockets roster top to bottom. Jalen Green is still coming into his own. Sengun is coming into his own. And they're in the Western Conference where they might not make the all-star team for a while because you got like Jokic at center. You got Book and at the two guard if you Jalen. So perception-wise, they might not seem like they have the best young core because of like accolades, but I mean, bro, we just really put together a starting five that was 25 and under.
And it's funny. Go ahead.
With two guys in Jalen and Sengun who could be all-stars. And then, like you said, with Thompson, sky's the limit. Because if he is, it becomes a starting point guard and he keeps reaching his potential, I mean, who's going to, like, really deal with him at that size on either end?
Yeah. Because 6'7" point guards don't grow on trees, as we know.
And like the two-man game with Jalen and Sengun, like Jalen's playing off the ball. Thompson's getting better at playing off the ball. So this won't be one of those teams and offenses where the ball is just sticking with one particular guy. Everybody's going to have to be accounted for on that team.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll say this. I'm not sure that they boast the best under 25 core. I think they're up there. I definitely think that team in the East has an argument in its own right with the two guys that they have that could easily be in the All-Star game in San Francisco in the coming months. But they're knocking on the door. And I remember going to see the Rockets a couple years ago with a friend of mine who's not really an NBA fan. They're a sports fan, but they're more into other sports like football and hockey. He's like, the Houston Rockets, like, they haven't been that good since James Harden left. I'm like, no. I said, but they got some pieces. I said, and in a couple of years, I said, when they actually get a real coach in the building and they get some defensive principles and they learn how to play as one, they're going to be fine. And I remember they smacked the Bulls that night. It was actually the night after Christmas in 2022. And I saw Sengun have a 20th night against Nikola Vucevic. And I was like, yeah, I said, they're slowly but surely starting to figure it out. And him and Jalen Green was playing well in the pick and roll game and stuff. And I'm like, to see all that coming to fruition, it's been very fun to see. And I'm excited to see just how far they can continue to take it.
And one last point on the that too is like veterans are important. Like, let's just say hypothetically, if you feel like Sengun needs to become a better rebounder, tougher, a better defender, well, now you got Steven Adams there to show him the ropes.
Yeah,
you want Thompson and Jalen Green to become better defenders. Dylan Brooks is there. Reed Shepherd and Thompson again. Hey, better point guard play on both ends. Fred VanVleet, Jeff Green, championship experience, been on multiple teams. I'm sure that he can give guys great advice on just being a professional, staying ready. You know, like, because a lot of young teams, they'll be great, but then there won't be any veteran presence in the locker room at all. So you're just really just relying on talent. And just hope that these guys are in the environment where they're just focused on basketball. Like, they're in Houston, Texas right now with millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, me and you both, we know how active Houston could be. And I'm glad that you bring up the importance of the veterans, because Jeff Green is a guy that I know has been extremely vital in the career of Jabari Smith Jr. You hear Jabari Smith Jr. talking about it a lot after Rocket shoot-arounds, how much it means to have a guy in the building that's been there, done that, got a ring to show in Denver, just like you see Fred VanVleet with a ring from Toronto to show the guys, like, hey, I've been there, done that. I done been to finals, multiple finals, did it with LeBron. You want to play at this level, this is where you need to be. So it's cool to see that. You know, you talk about Thompson with point guard play. If that dude just tighten up his handle this upcoming summer with the confidence that he has now, alongside of a jump shot that he's continuously working on, it could really, really get intriguing. It could really, really get intriguing in Houston. And like I said, I'm excited to see it because this is definitely a different team compared to the one from the James Harden era. And I think a lot of fans in Clutch City are going to see just how vital it is to have athletes at all positions that can switch and defend multiple spots, and most importantly, move the ball around and spread the wealth. But carrying away from the discussion of the team at H-Town to Orlando, the team that resides nearby Walt Disney World is currently riding the NBA's second longest win streak without one of the game's brightest young stars. After going down with a torn right oblique muscle in a road loss against the Bulls following a 50-point outing against the Indiana Pacers near the end of October, some wonder how the Magic might fare without their all-star forward, Paolo Banchero, who was said at the time to be reevaluated by the team's medical staff within the next 4 to 6 weeks. However, the absence of the 2023 Rookie of the Year has proven not to be too much of an issue for his teammates, as Orlando has rallied back atop the Eastern Conference standings by winning 6 straight games, and as of this recording, hold a half-game lead over the New York Knicks, the third seed, with the help of their fourth-year forward, Franz Wagner. Wagner, who has played and started in all 15 games for Orlando this season, has scored at least 20 points or more in 8 straight contests, in addition to recently receiving Eastern Conference Player of the Week honors at the top part of the week, as Wagner, averaged nearly 31 points per game alongside 7.3 boards and 5.7 dimes through 3 games last week. Over the last 6 games during their winning streak, the Magic have held opponents to less than 100 points in each outing and lead the league in defensive and net rating in that time span, allowing just 95.6 points per 100 possessions. We know, Torrance, that's the end of the floor where they hang their hat the most as it pertains to their identity. But what is it about this team when you watch them that makes them so unique enough to still win games despite being without the man who has become the face of their franchise in Paolo Banchero?
I mean, you mentioned it, man. It's the defensive end. It's like Jalen Suggs might be probably the best, one of the best perimeter defenders in the whole league right now. Jonathan Isaac, I mean, when he's healthy, he's been one of the better defenders in the league. They got good depth. Bringing KCP in, another good perimeter defender. I mean, they've kept, I think, one of what the last 4 games. Maybe 3 of the teams have scored under 100 points.
Yeah,
You know,
six straight
so
games. They haven't allowed 100 points.
In this NBA where everybody wants to shoot threes,
Right.
so it's quicker than ever to get to that 100, and they're not letting it happen. Staying locked in. I mean, honestly, if they could just get some help, I mean, like Wendell Carter is. He's always consistently hurt. And right now we got Paolo dealing with his injury. And last year, Franz was struggling. And he's definitely the complete opposite of that this season. I know you want to get to that at some point, but I guess I'll just start there. Like, Franz, I don't know if it was the contract. I don't know if it was the Olympics, but he's taking full advantage of Banchero being out. And I think it's going to be great for them in the long run. Because now they have a new problem on their hand, which is a great problem to have. How can we get both of these guys to play at this level at the same time on the court? Because when Paolo started the season, he was looking like top 10 player of like for the whole year it was going to be. Now that he went down, first instinct from everybody was, man, Orlando was off to a great start. This sucks. And Franz picked the ball up. He's been going to the end zone night after night. And I think that's definitely been the key, because now guys can look in that locker room and feel like, all right, we can ride him to victory every night. And just imagine the confidence that team will have once Paolo comes back.
When I look at this team, the reason why they so unique is because they have the luxury of being able to bring a guy in Jonathan Isaac off the bench for 25 minutes just to guard your team's best player. That's crazy to me. And he's still one of the most versatile, if not best defender in the league, in spite of having multiple knee injuries and surgeries. Like,
and the worst shoes in the league.
Yeah, huh?
And the worst shoes in the league. The
Judah
ones.
he got to work on that one. But outside of that, the man does his job. And you see why they call him the Minister of Defense in Orlando. you see why they call him that. You know, and we know why for the off-the-court reason, but he lives up to the name on the defensive end of the floor on the basketball court, man. And his ability to protect the rim, getting guys altering shots left and right, they feed off that, man. And if he plays enough games to qualify this season, you can book him being on an all-defensive team. Because the only reason why he hasn't been on one in his whole career is because he's been injured. And I you combine that with what they've been getting from their backup big man, Goga Batase. I hope I'm not butchering his name, but he's been playing some stellar basketball. He's not what Wendell Carter is in regards to his ability to stretch the floor. But what Goga does is he plays inside the paint, protects the rim, and he got a little low post game that's effective for him. And offensively, they do a great job of playing together. Like, they're not taking quick shots. Usually, most of the time, if you watch a possession with Orlando on an offensive end, they're going to take that shot within the final 5 seconds of the shot clock. And usually when they do, they get an efficient look. So with that said, you combine that with the way that they play, and they play together, and they got guys from winning environments in the past to come in there and revitalize and change their program for the better. Like, you talk about Jalen Suggs. Jalen Suggs reminds me of Alex Caruso a lot. Where did Jalen Suggs go to school? Gonzaga. Who is he coached by? Mark Few. Mark Few hasn't won a national championship, but he's been a couple of them. Been to countless Elite Eight, few Final Fours. You know, and Jalen Suggs was part of one of his teams that went to the Final Four. Matter of fact, the last one that made it to the Final Four, Jalen Suggs was on that roster. You take a guy like Franz Wagner, who played where? Michigan, under Juwan Howard, who had one of the most successful seasons in the history of the program there. That was, you know, winning player. Paolo Banchero, one of Coach K's last recruits. The last recruit, you know, played on his last team. They got to the Final Four. These guys know what it takes, like Jonathan Isaac, coached by Leonard Hamilton in Florida State, who has had a great deal of success in developing wings. Like, you see what Devin Vassell's doing in San Antonio. So when I look at them, man, what makes that team so damn unique is the fact that those guys play together and the energy that they exude on a defensive end and the way that they root for one another, you could tell it's like a college-like environment over there.
Yeah, I mean, like, we will find out really when Paolo comes back how they can pull all of this together, because there's still a few kinks they need to work out. Like, if you had to choose, would you make Anthony Black the point guard of the future, or would you seek to look at possibly trading for? I don't want to quite always just jump to all-star when we talk about trades, but would you look at bringing in a veteran point guard on that team if you really get the feeling like, man, you know what? Paolo and Franz can really make some noise in the playoffs in the East this year, when what the East is looking like this year, I mean, they could definitely make a conference finals run if healthy.
You said, would I trade for a veteran point guard and use Anthony Black as a chip to
would
do
you,
it?
Well, what I'm saying is, would you – like, do you feel like this team needs to try to add another big piece going forward at some point, or do you like what they have now?
I don't think
Anthony Black
is
young.
I don't think they need to add right now.
Okay.
Not right now. And Anthony Black, I really like what I'm seeing from him. Has the three-point shooting improved somewhat? Still could work on it a little bit, but like defensively, he's still getting after it. He's causing havoc in the passing lanes with his ability to deflect, you know, passes. And when he's getting steals, he's igniting, you know, opportunities for guys in transition. He's running the second unit extremely well. He's playing with a lot more poise than what we saw a season ago. I really like what I'm seeing from Anthony Black. And he's attacking the rim with confidence as well. And he's getting to the lane a lot more easier than he did in year one. So I like what I'm seeing from Anthony Black. And I think he really is their point guard of the future. If I was Jalen Suggs, I'm not going to lie. Even though I think Jalen Suggs is an all-defensive player, I would kind of be looking over my shoulder a little bit because this young 20-year-old is coming. And he's longer, too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe they look at it as they can play those two in the backcourt together. I mean, KCP is up there in age, and he only has a 3-year deal, so
That's a good
that's
point. I didn't
possible.
think of that.
But I don't know if Jalen got his deal yet. But I mean, I heard he was
He
talking
did.
like he got the deal.
Yeah, he got his deal.
Yeah, so yeah, it'll probably be KCP be the odd guy out. Because right now, like I just said earlier, with the 3-point shooting in the league, I mean, defense is at an all-time premium right now. And guys don't stay great defenders for the duration of their career. It's usually like a first 5 to 6 year thing, and then guys kind of, you know, stop giving a fuck about that end once they get paid.
Yeah, the knee injuries start happening and guys get hurt. You know, they just can't
Can't
get up
keep
and
up
down the
with,
floor like they
yeah,
used to.
chasing all, like
Yeah,
all of,
off screen.
you look up one day and you're not the young guy no more.
Yep. But yeah, like the Magic, they extended Jalen Suggs for 5 years, $150.5 million before the start of the regular season this year. So he's going to be there for a while, barring any, you know, trade or, you know, talks happening or surfacing. But we talk about Franz Wagner and how he stepped up to the occasion for this ball club in the absence of Paolo Banchero. I like Franz Wagner because Franz Wagner has always been a guy that had the ability to operate an offense in a half-court setting. We just didn't get a chance to see it as consistently when he's playing alongside of Paolo. But he showed that he could do it in the Olympics playing with Germany. And, you know, they gave Team USA some fits in an early exhibition prior to the Paris game. What is it about his game right now that really impresses you? Because I see a guy that has turned the corner in every aspect. Mid-range game has improved. We always knew he could shoot it. We always knew he could facilitate it. But with Paolo out, it seems like he's playing with more freedom and is enjoying it.
I mean, it's the shooting, because last year that was the problem. He couldn't hit a three. He couldn't hit shots last year. This year he's been knocking it down, and that opens up the floor a lot more for him, because now, okay, we got to respect his shot. Now I can drive. Now I can penetrate and kick out to other guys, create easier shots for everybody else. When Paolo comes back and I'm not on the ball as much, now I'm a threat off the ball to hit an open three once he gets double teamed. So to me, outside of the confidence, and I mean that would be the biggest improvement for me this season.
When I look at some stats from last week, they say during the five-game homestand Orlando had when they won all five games, they say he only had five turnovers. Like last year, I believe that was one of the things he was trying to work on when he was, you know, asked to play a little bit of a playmaking role in the half court in some like spurts, was working on you know, avoiding turnovers. He's done that to a T. Right now, at a time when the team is needing to do it the most. And for a big dude, like laterally, he's holding his own defensively as well. Like, we talk about his offensive game, but defensively, he causes just as much problems in the paint as well when he needs to rotate or serve as a help defender. It's kind of remarkable when you think about this team right now doesn't have Paolo Banchero or Wendell Carter Jr. dealing with plantar fasciitis. And they have, I believe, the second best defensive rating in all of basketball right now.
That's correct.
Like they doing that with reserves.
Yeah, man, but like that perimeter defense that will definitely hold up against any interior attack, you know, until those guys come back. You got to get past that first line of defense first. And with KCP and Jaylen back there, and then you got Jonathan Isaac on the wing and sometimes at the five, I mean, shit, bro. They should be at the top of the defensive rating.
How far do you think Orlando has the potential to go this season once Paolo, who, according to reports that recently surfaced, believes he could be back in the lineup in time for the holidays? When he returns, like, how far do you think they could go?
Well, earlier I mentioned that right now, based on the way the Eastern Conference is looking, they could definitely start eyeballing the conference finals. But just to keep it in the regular season at the moment, I'd say they got a chance to be top three, like top three. At this point, they probably should be shooting for top three. I don't anticipate Boston ever taking a fall down in the conference. And right now, Cleveland's created such a nice cushion for themselves. They should probably be at the top three even at season's end. So top three for the Orlando Magic, I would say, is something to shoot for.
Oh, that's definitely something to strive for. You know, they had the fifth seed last year. I was saying coming into the season, they should strive for top four. You know, you want to have home court advantage in the first round if you can help them, if you can help yourself. And I believe with the way that they're playing, that's something that they damn sure should be striving for, man, because that would be taking a step up. And I think that helps young teams.
Yeah, man, because right now we got Indiana struggling, the Knicks struggling, Milwaukee struggling. It's a lot going on in Philly right now.
Man.
Shit. Yeah, man, like, honestly, outside of Cleveland and Boston right now, they shouldn't look at anybody as a threat.
I agree with you. And it's funny, like, they actually play well against Boston.
Yeah,
because like, they you were looking a lot for of that
matchup. You were looking for that matchup last season. You were looking for that matchup last season in the postseason.
Yeah, that was the matchup I wanted in the second round. I'm not gonna lie.
I remember that.
Yeah, I want to see it in the playoffs this year if we could get
because you got Franz, Jonathan Isaac, and Paolo to throw at Tatum and Brown, because most teams they don't have two wing defenders. And I don't want to just evaluate like I'm a fucking scout or anything, but two B-plus, A-minus level defenders. And they got three of them. And so with the interior with Wendell, so, and shit. Man, if you really just start thinking about it, it's kind of they're almost built in Boston's image, because then you start thinking about the backcourt with Suggs and KCP. We shooting threes. We defending. We switching everything. Yeah, it could be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, they built like Boston, but see, they don't take as many threes a game as Boston.
That's a good thing for all of our eyeballs and those who want some semblance of entertainment and pure basketball play.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I get what you're saying about that, because like I really don't think a lot of people nationally are giving Orlando enough pub, man. And that's why I wanted to talk about them today, because, like, we're not talking about these teams enough, man. I know we got to sell the main teams on the marquee card, you know, Celtics, Lakers, all that. But Orlando right now is building something very special.
Well, people need to start getting used to it, because Paolo is a former number one pick. So, and what, American born at that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Guys need to start getting familiar. I mean, if you're checking out this show, though, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with them. And if not, shout out to us, man. We put you on.
For sure. Moving on from talking about a young upstart team in the East to the team that entered last year's playoffs with the top seed in the West and is looking to make it back-to-back campaigns where they can stake the same claim despite of missing one of the game's premier young rim protectors. After suffering a nasty fall inside the lane and a loss against the Golden State Warriors prior to Veterans Day, Oklahoma City Thunder announced that their big man, Chet Holmgren, will be sidelined for at least the next 2 months after suffering a hip fracture. Yet, since that fateful day, the Thunder have managed to win three out of their last four games, including a 16-point home victory against the Phoenix Suns in NBA Cup play this past Friday night, as they currently hold a half a game lead over the Golden State Warriors for the top seed in the West. Torrance, I think it goes without saying that when this team is fully healthy, they create a litany of problems for opposing head coaches with their size and length defense. Just like the other teams we've discussed in this episode, we also know that this is another young team in the league that's a force to be reckoned with. We heard Devin Booker in his postgame remarks discuss how OKC made life hard on them by blitzing, swarming them with Bradley Beal and KD out of the fold for Phoenix last Friday. Chet Holmgren is out for an indefinite period of time, as we mentioned. However, Isaiah Hartenstein suffered a small non-displaced fracture in his hand during the preseason, was recently spotted without a brace on his hand, and could be back soon to help fill that void in his absence. This is a team that we expect to see atop of the West. We know that they have depth. What do you believe is the missing piece for this Thunder team as it is currently constructed right now?
Honestly, just look at the geometry of the court. I mean, maybe like a knockdown, just pure like 3-point shooter, possibly to put next to J-Dub and Shea on the wing. You already got Chet, if healthy, in the paint. But honestly, man, this team, from a roster building standpoint, they really don't need anything. It's honestly a matter of building the experience and the reps. You know, last year they fell out the playoffs, losing to Dallas, I believe, game seven. They
it
got
game
pretty
six, yeah. Second,
game
second
six.
Round conference.
It
yeah,
was,
the conference.
It was game. It was game six. I remember. Yeah, Shea had a chance to win towards the end of the game. I mean, yeah, they just pretty much are at that proven stage, of development. The media has pretty much anointed them as the Western Conference champion since this offseason, with the Caruso and adding Hardenstein. So, I mean, unless they're really going to swing for the fences, there really isn't a move like for them to make on the edges, personally.
Which brings me to my next question for you. Do you believe that Oklahoma City general manager Sam Presti will actually be aggressive enough to make it after practicing patience over the last few years and building out the majority of his team's core through the draft? Because he has a litany of draft picks, as we know, or chest of them, that he could seek to use at his disposal to get some stars to OKC if he needs to, at least one of them.
It won't be a trade deadline move. If that were to happen, that would be in the offseason. If they just look up and realize, like, okay, we just got a clear hole on our team that we have to fill, you know. But if you look at the rest of the West, as far as team building outside of the Rockets, they really don't have any competition in that regard. This was the, what, number one seed last season. They're looking like they're going to be the number one seed this season. Got to a game six against Dallas. Denver, the team that was the king of the West, I mean, they're looking older. They're going through their own problems. We know LeBron and AD. Well, LeBron's old. AD, he deals with injuries. So from the standpoint of the Western Conference, I don't see the pressure to make that type of move. In the East, you know, Boston's there, but we got to see how that plays out. So, I mean, I don't see the star player that's, one, willing to come to OKC or desperate enough to come there. And two, I don't really see the spot in particular that they'll go put all their chips in for, unless you have one.
The reason why I was asking these questions to you is because as much as I like SGA and I love Jalen Williams' game, I love both of their games, there are times where I look at those two and I'm like, they could use a wing that can not only knock down shots and catch and shoot situations, but can take a little bit of pressure off of them when it comes to their responsibilities of having to create shots and be playmakers for others on the floor. And if it was a way that they could get a guy that could do that, I wouldn't be against it. Do I believe that Sam Presti is going to be aggressive enough to make a move this season? Nah. And I couldn't get mad at him for it because, like you said, I do believe that Oklahoma City is going to remain atop of the Western Conference, even without Chet Holmgren in the mix. But With Chet being down, Hardenstein's role becomes even more significant. And that's a guy that they can't afford to lose, because if he goes out for an extended period of time with another injury whenever he comes back, and we don't want that, but like if it does happen, then your depth really starts to get tested with it.
And I think the thing with OKC is a lot of people see those picks and they start playing NBA 2K in their head, and I'm one of those
Oh,
people.
for sure.
So it's not a slight to anybody. Well, somewhat of a slight. But those picks are really to keep the talent level high. They're not always needed to be used to bunch them all together to go get another superstar. Like,
that's true.
let's just say, for instance, we both feel like, yeah, having a guy at the two, let's just say Klay Thompson. Well, we got 20 some odd picks to take our chance at finding the next Klay Thompson. You know, as opposed to trading these picks and going to go get a superstar. Also, you can use those picks to go make smaller deals, to go get another Alex Caruso level player, another Isaiah Hartenstein level player. Like last year, Dallas went and got Daniel Gafford from the Wizards. You know, you package up a couple of role players on the bench and maybe a pick or two that doesn't cost you anything because you have so many of them that you can make a move. And I mean, you got those picks. You don't always want to trade them because I'm not sure if they're the team, but somebody has Philly's number. They have Philly's pick 1 through 6 protected, I believe, this season.
They do.
So, I mean, once again, like, do you trade that pick to go get a star? Or, I mean, we got a great draft coming up, I'm hearing. And, hey, that pick falls to number 7 or 8. And you might be able to get you something. So, I'm right now, I'm with the game of patience.
I'm not faulting Sam Presti at all. I actually like the way he's running this regime for the most part on this one. Now, we all know what happened with the James Harden, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook era. But so far with this reiteration of his new big three, I think he's done pretty well.
Yeah, you gotta go through it to grow through it. You know, he made his mistakes, and I'm sure he doesn't want to make that same mistake again. Because, I mean, like, let's just say, for instance, you want to, like, trade for Giannis. They're going to want J-Dub at the very least.
For sure.
You want to get rid of another James? You might have another James Harden situation on your hand. You know, so I think they should hold Pat, and they might need to get another center, because I don't believe the Isaiah Hartenstein thing. I mean, I just found out who that guy was like towards the end of last season. So, and we see this every year in the NBA. Some guy goes on a great run and a big market towards the end of the season. Everybody gets to know their name. A lot of times it's usually a white guy. See Timothy Mozgov. And somebody just throws them a big check, and everybody's like, oh, man, he's such a hard worker. And he, you know, they start using all of these intangible. They start using all of these intangible words that doesn't add up to shit. So I'm going to just hold out judgment on that part of the team.
I will say this about Isaiah Hartenstein. I had the pleasure of covering him a little bit when he was in Houston on behalf of the Rockets for Hoops Habit. I'm familiar with his game. He's not a bad player, but I was a little bit surprised, I'm not going to lie, when I saw that contract number come out. And I was like, man, that's a nice bag for somebody that came from where he was, being a guy that wasn't in the rotation, to working his way into the mix of the rotation and making the most of his moment under Tom Thibodeau when he was a member of the New York Knicks and thriving in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those contracts that you look at and it's like, okay, they spent the money because they just had it. And maybe it'll make the numbers line up better for a trade, you know, possibly down the line. Because whether people really see it or not, I said small forward, power forward is the most premium position, but that's probably just based on superstars, MVPs, and things like that. But building a team, the hardest spot to fill has been the center's position.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, Dallas made those two moves, missing the playoffs on purpose to keep their pick, and they got Lively, and they made that trade for Gafford. They got to the finals. Minnesota with the trade for Rudy got further in the postseason. So, I mean, I'm looking for a team like the Lakers to do the same thing. Besides Anthony Davis, go get another five, and maybe that can push them over the top. Same with the Golden State Warriors. And I know
I'm glad. No. You brought that up at the perfect time.
All right.
Lakers and the Warriors. Those are the teams that are within the top three alongside of Oklahoma City in the West right now as it is recorded. Looking ahead, which team in the Western Conference do you believe could match up the best against the Thunder in a 7-game playoff series? It could be either one of those two, or is it another team that we have to talk about that you think might match up with them well in the West?
Yeah, I'm going to just be difficult, and I'm going to tell you that pretty much every team in the West has a chance to beat them that's in playoff contention. I mean, they have a great roster. They won a number one seed, but I'm not all the way sold on that team getting to the finals. I believe that the Lakers and Warriors could beat them off of pure experience in a 7-game series. I still think that if they played the Denver Nuggets, their experience combined with having Jokic at the five and he's going to be the best player on the court, attacking probably your greatest weakness on the court, that would spell trouble. Minnesota, Julius Randle just hit a game winner the other night. Once they get that situation more in line, I expect them to go on a run. And is Shea better than Ant? I don't know. Phoenix Suns, same thing. Yeah, you were able to blitz book because, you know, the big dog wasn't there. KD wasn't on the court.
Yeah, that game didn't feel right watching it. I watched that game. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, are you going to have the same success with arguably one of the greatest scorers of all time there? And I'm sure he's going to want to put you guys out the playoffs if the opportunity presents itself. So when you look at teams like that, right now I just look at OKC like a great regular season team, you know. You got, like, Presti, certain GMs, even in – it's in all sports. Some organizations, they just know how to win the regular season.
That's true.
And that's the way I look at OKC right now. Like, I haven't seen a performance from them in the playoffs in the last couple of years to make me feel like they're just that dangerous. Right now, it's – like I said, I feel like it's more of a regular season and media thing, you know. Oh, Sam Presti, because we got this thing in the media where for some reason, I don't know if guys just want to sound smart, but they love to push these executives up. Make them,
oh yeah,
you know, you need to watch this guy. You need to pay attention to his moves. He's stacking up assets. You know, all of these fucking terms that don't add up to championships. Because the irony of it is the guys that they mention in that respect don't win championships.
Yeah, I mean, and that is a sports-wide thing. I mean, we know about it with Moneyball, Billy Bean and the Oakland A's, you know, the name a few. And like you talk about, there are some organizations throughout sports that have just been successful as regular season teams. When it comes to the playoffs, we never see them rise to the occasion in the season where it culminates in a championship. Now, when I look at Oklahoma City, I see a team that has championship potential, but they're not proven. And as a result of that, we always have to sit back and question them until they prove that they have gotten to that level. And that's why it's so hard, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong when I say this, Torrance, but that's why I believe you speak in the way that you are. Because it's a lot of teams right now in the NBA that aren't proven, with the exception of, I would say, Denver and Boston, especially Boston, that have had an extensive track record of getting at conference finals season after season.
Yeah, like this season, and in some ways, it's starting to remind me of 2022 when the Warriors won a championship. And I just know from conversations me and you had, I kept telling everybody, like, this is going to be the year that the team with the most experience is going to win the title. Because though they might not have the most talent, the teams with all the talent, they don't have the experience to get through those tough playoff battles. They don't have the experience on the coaching side or on the player side. So it's going to really have to be a, like, trial by error type of thing to get to the title for pretty much every team outside of, like you said, Denver and Boston. And I'm going to always give Steph, KD, and LeBron a chance in a seven-game series. But then those guys are surrounded by a lot of young players now too as well.
For sure. We got some big games to watch out for in week five, ladies and gentlemen. We got Jalen Brunson and the Knicks set to travel to Phoenix to take on Devin Booker and the Suns. 9 o'clock Central Time on ESPN Wednesday. Then you also have on Friday night a big time showdown in New Orleans with Steph Curry and the Warriors set to take on an injury prone Pelicans team. That's the first game on the doubleheader docket on ESPN, followed by showdown between Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic out in Denver at 9 p.m. And then on Sunday, a game that's going to be a huge game, and I think the NBA did a disservice to the fans with this. 2:30 p.m. Central Time, you got Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves set to travel to Boston at TD Garden to take on Jason Tatum and the defending champion Celtics. That's going to be one of those games as well. So among the games that you see on the schedule over the next several days in week five, which games are you looking forward to watching the most?
All right, before I get to my games, let me just speak on that last game you spoke on, that Minnesota-Boston. The NBA has a scheduling problem. This literally happens every year where it's like clearly a matchup we all would want to see, and it's like shoved on a random Sunday afternoon when they know America's watching football. I just don't understand. It's not even on NBA TV.
I know.
You have to be a true diehard NBA fan to not watch football and go to that game. And we'll watch that game. And I'm going to be one of those people. Like, so, God, I don't understand. Like, you guys, what was the show? Starting Five on Netflix.
You brought that up. You took the words out of my mouth.
One of the highlights of the show that they were promoing was the game with Boston and Minnesota. With Ant talking shit to JT. Ant talking shit to JB. It's Boston. It's one of the most historical franchises. Anthony Edwards is a guy that people want to push as to be the face of the league someday. I just don't understand. I mean, I don't know. It's arena scheduling. I don't know. I don't care. They want people to, like, really tune into the regular season. These are the games that you need to have. I shouldn't be watching Golden State against New Orleans on a Friday night. I'm not going to watch Golden State in New Orleans on a Friday night. No Zion Williamson either. I'm not watching it. Now, now for another game that's not on national TV that our dedicated community should check out, Denver-LA. I got that Saturday night for a game I got marked. I mean, because, hey, JJ, they hired you. I think the Lakers could have been to the finals the last few years, but that's me and my LeBron delusion maybe speaking. But the one team that they couldn't get past is the Denver Nuggets. They just can't fucking beat this team for any. If Jokic is healthy, or I don't know what he's dealing with, he's been out the last few games. If he's there, I'm just more curious than anything to see what is JJ Redick's strategy and his approach to beating his team. You know, we seen Darvin Ham last year do things like put Rui at the five against Jokic on defense so Anthony Davis could roam around. So that's a game I'm checking out. Man, one last game I would say. Oh, boy. Man, that Minnesota-Boston, that's borderline disrespectful.
No, I know. That should have been an ABC game around Super Bowl weekend or something like that, February. Like, that has no business being on while the rest of America's watching NFL football.
Well, let me do some great production work right here. Well, I will say, and we might get to this topic more next week as more info comes about. Clippers against Sixers next Sunday at 5 p.m. 76ers tied for the worst record in the league. They got about three more games this week. Might be a make or break type of week for them guys. I mean, because at some point you can only be down so many games. And PG came out this year hurt. We know what Embiid's been dealing with. And I guess we can, I guess in short, you could probably speak on this. There's a report about a team meeting that happened last night.
Yes, there is.
I'm gonna go ahead and pass it off to you to speak on.
Yes, there is. There is a team. There is a report according to Sham Sharania of ESPN. Tyrese Maxey had to step face to face with Joel Embiid and basically called him out, you know, on showing up late to team meetings and expressed disappointment with that and was saying that he needs to correct that, change that in an effort to help Philadelphia turn this season around. They also reports out there as of the top of the week when they lost on the road to the Miami Heat, where they say players were sitting in the locker room for a couple of hours, basically having meetings with one another. And you know, when you get those type of meetings, especially this early in the season, after your team has gotten off to the type of start that they have, being 9 games under .500, and holding the worst record in the league alongside the Washington Wizards with the cast of talent that they have, it's going to be a major story. So that's definitely a game to watch. And that's a James Harden homecoming game. And I'm pretty sure with some of the comments that we heard him say about Daryl Morey a year
ago. He's a liar. Daryl Morey is a liar.
Well, I'm pretty sure he's going to have some motivation to keep that crowd very dejected and silent on Sunday. But when I look at the top games that I would like the fans to watch out for in week five, I have a game that I don't think a lot of people may have circled, but you should. 6 o'clock Thursday night on NBA TV. The Detroit Pistons are taking on the Charlotte Hornets in Charlotte. The last time these two teams played, they had a very thrilling back and forth showdown that came down to the final second. Brandon Miller had a nice layup and got to the rack, won the game. LaMelo Ball is looking like one of the best players, if not the best player, but the game is on the line in the fourth quarter this year. He's looking like an early candidate and front runner for clutch player of the year. Does he have it in him to have another big-time moment in fourth quarter like he did against Detroit? I think he does. Let's find out about that. Detroit has also been playing some good basketball as of late. Yes, they are 7-9, I believe. But Cade Cunningham is looking like an all-star player. He's putting up some stellar numbers. Jalen Duren just recently had a double-double album the other night against the Bulls, albeit in a home loss. But J.B. Bickerstaff has those guys competing. Dayton Ivey's starting to come into his own. It's kind of looking like the problems wasn't all predicated on the players. You know, like we said last week, the value of coaching, and the value of coaching is paying significant dividends in Detroit, where they have won 7 games thus far through their first 16 games. I don't think they got their 7th win last season to have the new year. So that's going to be That's going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, man, I didn't really, think too much about that one. But, yeah, man, I'm definitely interested to see that, man. We got to see who's going to be the next light-skinned king out the stuff, you know, at the point guard spot with Kay Cunningham and LaMelo Ball. And, you know, we got Tyrese Halliburton, you know, proving people like me right at this moment. So, yeah, man, shout-out to Cade and LaMelo. Shit, Brandon Miller, you know, Miles Bridges, guys that you just mentioned on Detroit as well. You know, I would say if you're a college sports fan, I'm not really a college sports fan. I treat the bottom tier of the NBA sort of like my college sports. You know, teams like Charlotte, teams like Detroit, because the teams are young. They don't have a lot of vets. They play more of an up and down, free flowing style. A lot of mistakes are made, but you get a chance to kind of see the future of the league in those games.
No question about it. And that's a game that I'm looking forward to seeing, because the last time those two teams meted and faced off against one another, it was a very good contest, and I don't expect it to be anything different with those teams playing for some under new head coaches. Because I talked about JB Bickerstaff. Charles Lee has done a hell of a job in Charlotte. He's getting guys to buy in defensively. He's been coaching LaMelo up. Even LaMelo is taking more attention into his defensive game this season. I like to see that. And I think if LaMelo continues to play at the level that he's been, it's going to be some conversations as to whether or not he should be in the All-Star game for the second time in what would be the last 3 years, I believe. So the last 4 years. So that I think it'll be a fun game. Well, that concludes this week's episode of the New 24 podcast. Make sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast so that you stay fully in the loop and listen to each episode once it drops. We are now available on Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, Deezer, Fountain, and True Fans. You can also stay in tune with us as well through the RSS.com community if you like. We thank and appreciate all of you who have taken the time to listen to us. And if you like what you've heard thus far, then feel free to give us that 5-star rating and show love to us. And make sure you follow us across the Twitterverse, or X if you call it that. If you want to engage in conversation with us pertaining to the game as well, you can follow me at What Gabe Said and Torrance at TStacks_ to keep the talk on the action alive and well. We hope that all of you have a great rest of the week. Ball out and stay positive through all your endeavors. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, so long, everybody.